Hello, everybody. Welcome to the latest edition of the Tottenham Way podcast, which is being recorded a few hours after the 2-2 draw with Bournemouth, which was an interesting game in many ways. And now, of course, we are counting down to what is potentially a season ender or something a little more special, something that might yet kickstart the campaign if we can find a way past RZ. And I'm going to be a bit of a stickler here because I do voice the world feed for the Europa League and the Conference League. And I don't wish to chastise my fellow podcasters, but Tom Barkley and Dan Kilpatrick kept referring to them as AZ after the first leg. And because of Dutch pronunciations, it is RZ. And so we'll make that quite clear. Neither of them are here right now. Yeah. Tom, now our European expert, Tom Allnut from The Times is here. And you would not make such a terrible error as that, would
Almost
you?
Almost disrespectful.
It is. And we cannot afford to disrespect RZ after what happened on Thursday. But before we look ahead to that, let us reflect on what Ange Postecoglou, Tom, described as a match full of careless football, chaotic. He made reference to an atmosphere that wasn't great as well. I wonder why. At the end of it all, Spurs managed to pick up a point. I actually enjoyed the game, but I have to say I can seldom recall, Tom, an atmosphere where nobody cared. Nobody really seemed to care what was going to happen, which is perhaps a reflection on what has happened over the past few months. But what was your take on the 90 minutes in the sunshine of North London?
Hi, Marcus. I hope I'm not too echoey. I'm in my kitchen, so if the sound is a little bit kind of like I'm in a cathedral or something, then I apologise. But yeah, that's interesting you say that, because I sort of felt like it was a slightly foreboding kind of atmosphere where I felt like at any moment the atmosphere could quickly turn sour. I don't know if you felt that in the stands as opposed to the press box. I remember last year we talked a lot about, was it last year or was it the year before? It's hard to remember. A lot about apathy, didn't we? And we sort of, there was this idea that, you know, that the supporters have kind of checked out the season. I still think that I don't really get that feeling. I almost felt that this match was slightly strange in that regard, because it felt like if Bournemouth had scored a third, you know, and they'd gone on and won 3 or 4 nil, perhaps, it could very quickly have unravelled and turned toxic. I felt that because Saar got the goal back so quickly after Bournemouth scored a second, again, there was kind of like a shutting off of the sort of, you know, negativity that could have built up. I don't know. It was quite a strange game to analyse, I felt, because on the one hand, it had so many ingredients that you would associate with a real miserable, disappointing defeat, where Spurs really played, I thought, really poorly in that first half, and particularly in the first 10 minutes, to be honest. And yet somehow they come out of it with a draw, you know, and a comeback in the second half. And, you know, two or three bright performances, I thought, particularly off the bench, that actually made everyone go away and think, okay, you know, that was all right. It was a draw against a good Bournemouth team who are pushing for the Champions League. And actually, I thought maybe the overall conclusion was that everyone was kind of suspending judgment almost until Thursday, you know. And I don't think in any regard do you come away from that match feeling more confident in either the team or in Postecoglou heading into Thursday. Equally, I think people are probably prepared to wait now and see. It was sort of a dress rehearsal almost, you know, and I don't think anyone's feeling any more buoyant going into that huge game on Thursday. But equally, you know, a 2-2 draw is a 2-2 draw, isn't it? And I think it was always going to be about the vibes, right? This isn't about the league table anymore. You know, I talked about this before, about how Spurs are no longer going for anything in the league. It's all about momentum and rhythm and keeping the fans on side and getting the players fit and sharp. I don't think the vibes were improved today. I feel like everyone came away from that match probably feeling worse about the team than they did at the beginning. Do you agree with
yes,
that?
Yes, no, I do, Tom. And of course, if we draw 2-2 on Thursday night, it won't be enough. We will be out. And no, honestly, all those around me, there's just this. I mean, I think the thing we must state, which became so apparent after the 1-0 defeat in Europe during the week, is that suddenly I feel as though everybody has turned on Postecoglou. For most of this season, we've had this narrative that, you know, there's been so many injury problems, et cetera, that it's the way the club is managed. Daniel Levy is the number one enemy. But after Thursday, suddenly I think everybody, I have to say, saw the light. And I don't mean to be this constantly miserable old sod who's slaughtering the manager, but I feel as though I have seen it for quite a long time to come, and suddenly now everybody else is looking in the same direction. I don't think there's any point in removing him from his post tonight, despite the fact that I was bellowing. I mean, I'll give you one example of why I cannot believe that he can't see what all of us sitting in our seats could see today. Pedro Porro was having a shocker. You know, listen, the guy tries his socks off, but his distribution is poor. He's often, you know, isolated and he's beaten for pace down that right flank. It wasn't just me. We were all saying, for God's sake, move Spence across to right back, bring Udogie on at left back. Can you not see that, Ange? He did it in the 87th minute. And everyone was laughing, I'm afraid. And also, and I know that if Tom Barkley was here, Tom A, he would say, Postecoglou does show a little bit of passion every now and then. But I was fascinated watching the two managers today, fantasizing that Iriola will be in the home dugout next season, your doppelganger, because he's constantly cajoling, encouraging. He has put together such a clever team. And just along from him is Postecoglou, who for probably, I think, 87 out of the 90 minutes stands there with his, you know, his arms wrapped around his chest, looking to me as though he's waiting for a bus to get him to the tube station, to get him to the airport, to get him back to Australia. I thought the contrast between the two managers was enormous, but I do feel
He's not one of the more demonstrative managers on the touchline. I do think there are managers who are more or less demonstrative. I mean, for example, Arne Slot is not, you know, a hugely charismatic figure on the touchline.
You don't have to be if you're top of the league and probably going to win the Champions League as well in the League Cup.
Exactly. But what I mean is it's not kind of an essential ingredient to being a head coach. I guess I'm slightly on board with you. I think it's a nice thing to have, in part not so much for the players and the tactics in game, but I think there is a sort of performative art to managing when it comes to fans particularly as well. And I agree that the Postecoglou doesn't have that in his makeup. I mean, it's interesting that you talked about Porro, because I do think he has been struggling in recent weeks, you know, and it's a funny thing really with this whole team, because they're obviously getting players back now. And Postecoglou did make the point before this match that everyone is kind of acting as though, you know, he has his best team available. And I guess it's because everyone is so desperate to get to that point that maybe we're kind of just rushing towards that point before it's quite happened yet. I mean, I guess, you know, he said Van de Ven and Romero weren't back, that Kulusevski is obviously out now. And I guess to some extent, people don't want to hear this anymore, you know. And I think even he realizes that, you know, when he said it before the game, he was almost kind of loath to kind of go into it again. But I think he is kind of keen to point out that he hasn't quite got his best 11 out, you know, and he's still waiting for those key players to return. Equally, you know, the problem he has, and Porro is a good one, is a good example of this. I think there are key players now who are suddenly, you know, they were playing quite well before, who aren't playing as well. I mean, or not playing at all in the case of Kulusevski, you know. And I mean, you know, maybe we'll get onto it, but I think, you know, Romero's performance today was quite something, really. I mean, I sort of think with Romero, and I know people will say that he is rusty, you know, and I think that is probably where Andrew's kind of going after the match. But I think actually you look at the mistakes he made in those first, literally in the first 20 seconds, and that's not rustiness to me. You know, like I think a rusty player is someone who maybe has a slightly heavy first touch, or, you know, when the ball is in a slightly awkward position, maybe doesn't quite have the kind of body shape correctly to kind of make the right pass or the right control. That's kind of rust, you know, or even maybe you get a little bit fatigued and therefore you make a late challenge or whatever. Romero's problem was his decision making. You know, he literally in the first 2 or 3 seconds made 3 or 4 decisions. They were all calamitous. You know, the first one where he tried to clip a pass completely nonchalantly across the edge of his box and gave it straight to Evan Nilsson. The second one where he put Bissouma in all sorts of trouble, had 3 Bournemouth players around him. And to be honest, I actually think an alert elite central midfielder would have navigated that situation. Bissouma at the moment is not that.
No.
So he gave it away. And then we also had the one where Romero made the foul on the edge of the box, you know, and gave a free kick away, you know, right in a great area. I honestly thought his performance, if it wasn't Romero and it wasn't the context, you'd take him off. Yeah. You'd take him off after 6 or 7 minutes and say your head's not in the right place. If that was Mourinho or Conte and it wasn't Romero, and there's a lot of ifs there, I think they would be off. I think Mourinho would be taking him off after 7 minutes. And
probably. Probably. I don't want to sound like Arsene Wenger, but I'll blame the Weaver line. I didn't see the first couple of minutes because the trains were screwed up today. And I tweeted, you know, would the club possibly bear in mind the thousands of fans who were still streaming out of White Hart Lane station at 3:08? You know, a young boy of about 7 or 8 finally arrived in his seat next to me at 2:15. He's missed a large chunk of the game. And I said to a policeman at the station, are you relaying this? The trains are not working properly. Could we have a delay? No, of course. They don't care. Please, obviously, I missed the chaotic start. I don't know where Romero's head is. And obviously, you know, there are many who are very cynical and think, well, he's going to go off now and play for Argentina and all the rest of it. I mean, that's just one of the problems. But if Dan was here again, Tom, he would accuse me of being an old man shouting at the clouds. But trust me, there were 40 or 50 people around me shouting at the clouds as we tried to play out from the back. I love Vicario as a goalkeeper. He is a great shot stopper. And actually, he caught a couple of difficult crosses as well today. His distribution from the back is an embarrassment. And we kept getting ourselves into trouble. I mean, 2 or 3 times, well, you've touched upon it, but we were gifting Bournemouth opportunities. I know in this modern game, this modern era, there's all the plus marks if you can play out from the back, et cetera, et cetera. I don't think we are good enough. And some of the bigger cheers today came when Vicario hoofed the ball up the field. Let's just be a bit sensible about this. But if it's part of the Ange identity, I don't know. We have to play out from the back. I'm afraid I've called Ange Bull Ange Ballocks of late because we've lost that identity to a large degree. But we keep inviting trouble upon ourselves. And Porro, more often than not, is at the centre of all that. He's really fought hard this season. He's played probably, I don't know the minutes stats, but he's right up there, isn't he, with Kulusevski in terms of minutes played. But he looks shot to me at the moment. And there are alternatives. And I just don't understand why the manager can't see that. And we got lucky. That's the bottom line, Tom. We got lucky. The goal they had disallowed for offside, one of the goals of the season, if it had counted. They hit the post as well. I know we did as well. But, you know, they've had injury problems too. And I mentioned Iraola, and I don't know if he would be interested in coming to Spurs, but he's dealt with those problems. He seems to have that ability. And we keep making excuses.
I mean, I think the Bournemouth comparison is slightly unfair because they don't have the same schedule that Spurs has in terms of Europe. So it's a slightly easier process to manage when it comes to recovering those players. I also think Tottenham's injury crisis is more long-standing. So although Bournemouth had it bad in January or February, I can't remember exactly when it was, Spurs' goes back to December and even November, you know. So that pile-up of fatigue, I think, is more severe for Spurs. But yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, I just didn't see the comeback really happening, I have to say. And in a way, if you look at the two goals, okay, to be honest, I mean, Saar should have scored the one he missed. I mean, how he dragged that.
Well, he certainly should have got it on target. I mean, that was inexcusable.
I don't understand why he sort of went for the sort of lace finish, which to me was a much lower percentage shot than just side putting it into a corner, you know, from that distance. And, you know, I felt sorry for, I think it was Madison, wasn't it, who really did it brilliantly to weave through and tee up Saar for that shot. And actually, I thought Madison made a difference off the bench, actually. Yep. I thought I thought the subs, all of them did well, you know. And if we're talking about positives, I thought Bergwijl made a massive difference. I thought Son just brought a real kind of impetus and energy from the left. Immediately, he kind of curled one wide, didn't he? And he also got into the box and nearly sort of got on the end of a pullback from Odegaard. And I thought Madison as well. I thought all three of them changed the game for Spurs to some degree. But equally, you know, if we're honest, the two Spurs goals, one is a complete fluke because Saar clearly is trying to cross it and it wasn't a good cross because he massively overhit it. And the second one, I think Son was very smart, you know, and I think what Iraola said after the game was about right. It wasn't not a penalty, but Son did very well to kind of draw the contact and go down. And I think Kepa was basically sort of, was done there, really. Kippers. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it was poor goalkeeping, I have to say. Yeah. I think his mind might still have been on what had just happened with the earlier goal, but Son was actually going nowhere. And I just, Tom, let's talk about Son again for a moment, because all I've heard for the last few months is that his legs have gone, and there's a lot of disrespect, I feel, being shown towards him. And yes, in the past couple of months, for large parts of this season, he hasn't been the Son that we have come to love and adore. But it's really actually pissing me off, because I think he's lacking, I've said this several times, he's lacking confidence. I don't think his legs have gone. And there were some vintage moments when he came off the bench today. As you rightly said, the one where he cuts inside, curls the ball, just misses. And you could see how frustrated he was when it didn't quite go in, and he kept his nerve. I mean, there was all the time delaying before the penalty, and it looked as though Solanke was going to take it. Then he handed it to Sonny and he chipped it down the middle. And I would just love to see him have a good end to the season, because I do think he's still got lots to offer, and I think he's being disrespected.
Well, I also think that his performance, he showed a lot of heart. And I mean, we talk about the kind of cliche positives when you have a team that come back from 2-0 down. You're talking about grit and resilience and heart. And I think I would attribute nearly all of those things to Son, to be honest, more than anyone else. Because when he came on the pitch, I didn't see a player who was kind of feeling sorry for himself, who had the hump with the manager, who was kind of, you know, devoid of confidence or rhythm. I saw someone who basically was taking responsibility, you know, who said, I'm the captain of the team. I'm going to drag us through this mess and try and pull us out of it. And I think some of the criticism of Son has been fair, because I do think in the last few weeks and even months, he's been nowhere near his best. But I thought he really stood up today, actually. I really think he stood up in a really difficult situation where the atmosphere was turning negative. The team were on their knees. And I think he actually really created something. And 80-90%, I think, of that comeback you could put down to him and Bergwijn and Maddison, the three of them. Because to be honest, you know, there are four or five performances in that first half. We talked about Romero. I think Bissouma was, I mean, I gave him 4 out of 10 in the little ratings we do at the end of the report. I thought that was generous, to be honest. That one in the centre circle where someone played the ball to him and he could have just taken on the half turn and carried it forward because there was no one behind him. And for some reason, not only did he take a touch back towards the part where the pass had came from, but the touch itself was so heavy that he ended up basically setting up a Bournemouth counter-attack where Evan Nilsson was going away. And all day, Bissouma's touch was off. All day, he just wasn't at the races. And I don't know if Ange has lost Bissouma because of what has happened in the last few weeks, where he took him off at Emirates at half-time. He took him off again at half-time today. He's come on off the bench, I think, once or twice in recent weeks, you know, very much late on in the last 4 or 5 minutes. And Bissouma, I don't think, is the kind of character who you can carry necessarily through that kind of turbulence. I don't know. It's not information, but my opinion is, looking at the way he's playing at the moment, I don't think Bissouma is on board with this right now. And it doesn't mean that he can't come back. I don't see a player there that Ange can trust or rely on. And to be honest, I don't see much from Bentancur either. No. He played for an hour today, gave the ball away, was incredibly loose with his passes. And you look at it, and I think we've talked about this before, and Tom Barkley particularly has been honing in on this midfield problem. I think he's absolutely right. That whoever Ange plays in midfield, he tends to take off at least one at half-time. He takes off another one after the hour. He brings in Maddison, or he starts with Maddison on the bench and takes him off. It's Bissouma. It's just a rotating door, and he can't decide who he wants to play. And I don't really know if it's the players to blame because none of them are quite good enough, or whether it's Ange to blame because he's not getting the best out of them.
Well, I mean, listen, we're still trying to work out exactly what Ange Ball's all about. But the one thing we do know is that the midfield gets exposed. And I think that Bissouma in particular has been defeated by the system. You know, he doesn't know what he should be doing. And I totally agree with you about Bentancur as well. I mean, I really like, and I certainly liked, Bentancur, but he's lost a lot of belief. I mean, I wrote a little list. They're lacking a game plan. They're lacking creativity. They're lacking leadership. They're lacking a cutting edge. And they're lacking belief. And I think that Bissouma and Bentancur in particular are victims of that. And I fear, I mean, if the manager changes in the summer, who knows? We have seen what Bissouma can do. We've seen what Bentancur can do. The biggest issue, I feel, is that the whole team, just about the whole team, has lost a lot of its inner core strength. And there are one or two, I'd say, that doesn't apply to. I mean, Spence is fantastic yet again today, whether he was playing left back, right back. He's so calm. He's so assured. Okay, occasionally he gives the ball away. I don't mind that. And by the way, that's what Postecoglou said as manager. You know, I want my players to be doing positive things. And if occasionally they make an error, so be it. I feel that, like with Bissouma, for example, he's made too many of those and now he's a frazzled wreck. Bergvall, when he came on second half, the way he drives forward, you know, occasionally he'll make an ill-judged tackle. But Tom, this guy, I mean, let's look at those two in particular, Spence and Bergvall. They are two, I think, of the most exciting young players, not just in the country, but in European football at the moment, which is why if we can get a properly coached, structured side, I do believe the future is bright at Spurs.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the squad today, you know, you look at the team sheet, and I know that the team sheet for Tottenham has been slightly deceptive for a long time because the names are there, but you don't quite know what their energy levels are or their injury status is. But actually, if you look at the names on the sheet today, the substitutes bench was, I mean, it was better than Arsenal's today at Old Trafford. It was better than Manchester United's. It was, I mean, you know, the options they had, Madison, Van de Ven, Son, Tell, Udogi. I mean, that's a really good bench. And I thought, well, maybe that, you know, that must be mean that the starting lineup is, you know, rotated. But the starting lineup was good as well, you know, when you look at the players they have. When this team is fit and available and they have options, this is a good squad. It really is a good squad. And Ange would, you know, be shouting at us right now saying he hasn't had them available all season. And I think, you know, that's a fair shout. But the bottom line right now is he has most of them available. He does. And that is the thing, is that there are plenty of teams in the Premier League across Europe who have got two or three, you know, injuries. And yeah, that's where Spurs are right now. And I think this is where, and it's interesting what you were saying about post RZ Alkmaar, because you could feel that, I think, in the stadium. You could feel it in the press box. I wasn't in the Netherlands, but I went today and I thought something's, you know, has changed between this game and the last game I did against City. You could feel there was a different tension in the air, that the players almost looked a different level of confidence. The fans had a different level of belief in the team. Everything was sort of teetering on the edge the whole match. And I think that's because that match last week, I think, had more damage, I think, than maybe people realise, you know, in terms of course, everyone knows that 1-0 is overturnable. Everyone knows this week that Spurs can win that tie at home. But I think it was the match when everyone thought, even with our players back, this team isn't functioning right now.
No,
clearly a big problem for the team and clearly a big problem for Ange.
Yeah, and both Dan and Tom are absolutely right when they did their sort of reflections on that match. Even if we do scrape through in the second leg against RZ, if we carry on playing as we are at the moment, there is no way we're going to get to the final and win it. And that's the frustration. I mean, I don't always want to sound like a negative monster. There were positives. As poor as Romero was at times today, okay, he got 61 minutes under his belt. Van de Ven came on, had a couple of those blistering runs, and Tom, I panic every time he does that because I think, oh no, he's going to clutch his hamstring at the end of them. There was one great run where he then just didn't get the pass right for Solanke, but what a fantastic Rolls-Royce defender he is, as long as he stays fit. I love him. Solanke played the night.
There was someone, Marcus, I don't know if you saw from where you were sitting, but there was someone, I can't remember who it was, there was someone whose job it was on the side, after Van de Ven had basically taken his kit off and was waiting to come on, he was basically down on his knees, sort of wobbling Van de Ven's hamstring for about 5 or 6 minutes, rubbing cream in, massaging it, giving it a shake. And you sort of thought, after 3 or 4 months of rehab and recovery, you know, this is sort of the last, let's just give it everything we can to make sure this little muscle is as warm as possible.
Well, I mean, absolutely. I mean, because he's such a good player, it would be, I think, an absolute tragedy if he becomes one of those. I mean, listen, Ledley King towards the end was never training, and we know what a fantastic defender he was. His body let him down on so many occasions. I hope that doesn't become the case with Van de Ven, because he's fantastic. But he got some minutes. I mean, Solanke, I thought his hold-up play again was really good. We've mentioned Bergvall. We've mentioned Sonny. So there were some encouraging signs there. I don't know. I've heard a rumour that Danso might have picked up a little bit of a knock. We'll find out more about that later in the week. I'm going to come up in a moment with my team, my suggested starting 11 for Thursday. But I just
can I just agree with you on Solanke. I thought, yeah, I thought in a half of you know, nightmares. I actually thought he played pretty well in that first 45 minutes. You know, some of his touches were really good. He brought other people into play really well. And on the two or three occasions when Tottenham did go direct to him, as we saw in the first half of the season, you know, he's so tidy and he's so good at bringing other people into play and making difficult balls look easy. And actually, you know, I'm not really in the mood to give Romero his dues, but there are a couple of times when you saw that Romero pass that he can do that not many other central defenders do, where he sort of looks right and steers the ball centrally, you know, into a Solanke's feet and just turns the whole angle of the game. And a couple of times that, there were one or two instances in the first half where that link up really worked well. And they set, I think, Johnson free down the right. And you thought, oh, there's a team here, you know, and those old kind of connections are still there. So, yeah, I agree. I thought Solanke was excellent. And I actually thought Odubeyo was lively as well. You know, he didn't deliver the kind of final ball, I don't think. There were a couple of times when I thought the pullback was on and he didn't quite pick out the man. But he, I thought, looked lively as well. I thought we had a decent game.
Well, Ash, I'm glad you've mentioned him because I wanted to ask you about the two wide men who started, Odubeyo and Johnson. For me, Johnson is an impact sub. I think that's when he could come on and do the most damage. And I think down the line, that's what I would see from him. Odubeyo, you see those glimpses. But yeah, again, I was thinking that either you've got the pace, take your man on, or just whip the ball across. And the Bournemouth first goal, Tom, was just such an example of whipping in a big, strong cross. And it was finished off brilliantly by Tavernier. But I always feel that Spurs are just overthinking. We get into a position, but oh no, then we hold the ball up, we pull it back, we start again, and often we lose the momentum. And I don't know if that's a lack of belief, if what it is, but I would like to see Odubeyo be just a little bit more positive, because I think there's a really good player in there, and he's young, and of course he's hardly played this season because of injury.
Yeah, I mean, it's still early days, obviously. You know, he's only 20 and it's very early days for him in terms of his Tottenham career. So, you know, we can't ask him to be brave and aggressive and also find the perfect final ball at this point, you know. So I think it's just good to see someone who has that kind of daring, to be honest, you know, that kind of sense of adventure where he wants to take people on, he wants to isolate defenders one-on-one and get into those positions around the box where he can play final passes. So, yeah, I mean, I thought we had a good game.
Let me ask you this question, and I base it on the fact that a few years ago, as we all know, Spurs sacked a manager 6 days before a cup final. Mourinho, of course, was not in charge of the League Cup final against Manchester City. Tottenham have now won once in 10 home league games, and that was against Manchester United. I was talking to a few fans afterwards, and they were saying, listen, we have no chance of winning the Europa League for as long as Ange Postecoglou is in charge. What do you see happening here? I mean, from my point of view, I think you can't sack a manager 4 days before a big European game. And I wonder if we go out of Europe, do you just let him see out his contract? I mean, it'll save Daniel Levy some money. Where do we stand with the manager at the moment, looking at the short term, you know, the next 4 days and then at least the remainder of the season as well?
I mean, I think they have to give him the second leg of the Europa League. You know, I mean, they drew 2-2 against Bournemouth today. With a lot of luck. Yeah, but they did draw 2-2. They didn't lose the game. They didn't get hammered. They didn't get humiliated. I think they're only 1-0 down, you know, against RZ. They go into that tie with, okay, not much form, not much confidence, but they're in it, you know, and I think they have a chance. So I don't see the merit or much chance, to be honest, of them making any change before that tie. After that, if they lose, I think all options are open, to be honest. I still think there's a reluctance from the club to go down the kind of interim appointment line. Equally, I think there does come a point when the defeats mount up and when all the kind of possibilities for a revival are gone, where it's difficult to kind of keep the players on side. And sometimes, you know, people like me who want things to be sort of neat and tidy and done properly and you kind of just sticking out until the end of the season, I still think that is the ideal course. But sometimes events overtake, you know, and if they go out to RZ and then they lose 3-0 at Fulham and the players look like they're not interested anymore, then, you know, the club will be forced to make a decision, I think. You know, that's that's the reality. But, you know, these things can go either way, Marcus. You know, and I think at this point, you know, you can also, as always with Postecoglou, you can almost look at it two ways, because they're still in the tie. I agree that on current assessment, you would say they haven't got a chance of beating the best teams in this competition. And, you know, some might say they haven't even got a chance of getting through on Thursday. But ultimately, they could have Van de Ven back. They could have Romero back. Let's see. They might play both of them. You know, that might have been the plan all along, to kind of get them both ready for this match. They do have Solanke back now. Okay, Kulusevski's out, but otherwise they've got a pretty full team, you know. And Ange has always maintained that Romero and Van de Ven particularly are really key to the way they play, you know, in terms of the press, in terms of playing out from the back. And I don't think those arguments are completely nonsensical. Like, I do see that. So if we look at it glass half full, they come back against RZ, they win the game, they win the tie, and they keep going, you know, and this team develops a little bit of momentum with their best players back for the last, you know, 2 or 3 months. And I don't think that's impossible, but there were elements of today, I thought, in that first 45 minutes, that first hour, where you could see it, where you could see a team that was just slightly, I thought, wobbling and teetering on the brink of not just the performance, but the belief in terms of what they were doing. That was, and I think that was the most concerning thing for me. It looked like a team that was slightly questioning what they were being asked to do in some areas. And I think that's, you know, very difficult once that starts to set in.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Interesting, actually, Tom Barkley, our own Tom, had a piece with Jed Spence who was saying, oh, we're behind the manager. But of course he's going to say that. But wow, of all the players, actually, Jed Spence has got good cause to be frustrated with Postecoglou, because it took him so long to finally realise what a fine player he has been. But I think you're right. There's no point jettisoning. Why can't I say that word? Getting rid of him before Thursday. Let's see if we can sneak through, and then probably it's going to be Eintracht Frankfurt, who played really well at Ajax. But that's down the line. We will have some players back. Looking finally, Tom, at the starting 11 for Thursday night. This is what I would go with, and tell me if you would agree or if I made a few errors. I don't want to risk both Romero and Van de Ven starting, because I've got memories of, was it the Chelsea game where they both went off? We can't risk that possibility. And Danso, to be honest, I think he's done pretty well since coming in. I think he's a slight, you know, a step up on what we've had before. So I'm going with Vicario, and I'm saying to Vicario, for Christ's sake, sometimes just boot the ball. You don't have to play some ludicrous pass to your right back or your left back. And please don't wait until the last second, a la Fraser Forster or even old Kinski, to get rid of the ball, because it's giving us all kittens. But he's a terrific goalkeeper nonetheless.
He made some good saves, though.
He
Marcus,
really did. No, he can't finish
this pod with the idea that Vicario was to blame. That's going to have been 3-0. I mean, 3-0 down if it wasn't for him. He made some really good saves. And even that save from the near post from Kerkez, I think, was a really smart save as well. So,
yeah, no, I'm not criticizing.
He may have issues with his distribution, but his saves have been
He's great. And I haven't really got a problem with the way he responded at the end of the game last Thursday. Who knows exactly what he meant by his gestures, but he quickly apologized for that. And fair enough. So he's in goal. Right. Spence is going to play right back. Porro has to be taken out of the spotlight for the moment, and you play your doggy at left back, and I'm going to start in central defence with old Ted Danson and Van de Ven, because, okay, if his hamstring goes, it goes, but we are a much, much better team with Van de Ven in our defence.
Well, on the defence, I mean, who do you think is readier at the end of that match today to play on Thursday? I mean, it's a difficult one, isn't it? Because Romero played for an hour, but didn't look ready. Although, I mean, you could arguably say he got better, but he could hardly have started from a lower point.
I thought Van de Ven looked great from the moment he came on, to be honest.
Van de Ven came on for the last half an hour and looked pretty comfortable. But you would think that because he came on for the last half an hour as opposed to starting and playing 60, that they think he's maybe slightly behind. I mean, we're guessing here, but
no, we're talking,
it's interesting.
Let him start and let's try and get the goal back quickly and go 2-0 up and let's not leave it till the last 15 or 20 minutes and bring on the big guns. I want Van de Ven to start. with Dancer, and Romero can come on and have a big part to play at some stage. Now, the midfield is always a minefield. We know that Bentancur can't play because he is suspended. I mean, Bergvall, for me, is just about the first name on the team sheet. He has to start. Madison has to start. We've got to be creative. We're going to have to break down a very, very durable defence. They're going to defend for their lives. There's no doubt about that. So let's have Madison's clever little touches and hopefully a couple of decent set pieces. There was another horror set piece today. We've had two of those in the last couple of games. But I want Madison. And I thought Saar played well today. So for me, it's Saar, Madison and Bergvall in midfield. I don't know how good that balance is. Whether there's a, I mean, my other option, by the way, and I got criticised for suggesting this, but you know, Archie Gray didn't play, and everyone says, well, his best position is somewhere in midfield. Could he be the number six? Maybe play Gray just ahead of the defence, in place of Saar. I don't know because I haven't seen enough of that, but I want Gray to be involved and up front.
They're not going to play him though. You know, they're not going to trial that for the first time.
Well, that's true. That's true. They should have tried it before. Could have tried it today. Didn't really matter. Why didn't he play at number six today?
Yeah, I mean the Gray situation is fun, interesting, isn't it? Because he's been playing centre half all year. Now I sort of feel like there's an element of resting him because he played so much that I think there's a fatigue aspect there where they think that he needs to have some time out. But equally, you look at, you know, Bissouma, Bentancur and the struggles they're having, and you wonder if he will get some game time in the last whatever it is, nine games or so in central midfield.
Well, he should do.
But not a mismatch, I don't think.
No. Well, I can understand that. And then up front, you know, I want the big guns out early because I want us to score in the first 10 or 15 minutes. I want it to be one of those great European nights and RZ wilt. So Sonny's got to start, Solanke through the middle, and I want Odegaard to run at his man, get past him, whip in a couple of balls, two up before half time into the quarterfinals of the Europa League. Do you like that starting 11?
You're sounding less and less like a selection and more like a team talk, Marcus.
Which... Someone's got to give it. And that's the other thing, by the way. That is the other point I want to make quickly here, Tom. Ange Postecoglou, please learn from your mistakes. Show more expression on the bench and stop looking down at the ground. That's got to stop when you're doing your interviews from now on. Come on. Are you listening to anybody? Look in the person's eye. Those are the other two things I want to see this week.
I feel like you think that Ange is going to get sacked and you just want to make sure that you're getting out all your greatest hits before he goes.
Do you know, I sound like a bully and I apologize. And some people think I'm a monster and they say that this podcast is no longer listenable. I probably care too much about this bloody football club and I'm so desperate for us to win some silverware. So I'm sorry if Ange is getting all the ire, but I was looking back at all the managers since, I mean, I go back a long time. It's scary, really. I mean, I can remember, you know, as a very young man or boy, the 70s, but you know, from Keith Birkinshaw onwards, I've seen all the managers. And I'm sorry to say that although Postecoglou has sort of developed this cult status with some, I would put him in the group with Villas-Boas and Christian Gross. I think he's that far down in terms of our managers over the past 30 or 40 years. And I'm sorry, but I think he has been found out.
Well, currently you might do because of the kind of league position and where it is. I mean, there is a lot of context there, obviously. And he's also, you know, Villas-Boas had Gareth Bale and so did Harry Redknapp. And most of the last three or four managers have had Harry Kane, you know, and Ange hasn't had any of them. He's had a young team that are transitioning and, but anyway, you know, this is probably for the podcast post-Ange when we're doing a review of the tenure. I mean, I, there is a wider point here. And I think before we come back to the lineup, which is, I sort of get the sense in quite a few of the press conferences recently where, you know, Ange has sort of suggested that people are very quick to criticise and they're always looking for the negative with him. And that, you know, what was the comment before this match where he kind of said, of course, you know, people's assessment right now will be that we can't win the Europa League because that's the kind of the narrative that everyone wants to make. Everyone wants him to fail, I think is his kind of suspicion right now, the kind of chip on his shoulder. I have to say, I think that is completely misjudged and that actually almost the opposite is completely true. You know, that the vast majority of the media, certainly, and I actually think
the fan base at Spurs particularly, and also the wider fan base, are really behind Ange generally, you know? And I say that lightly.
Up until very recently, I think you're right.
The wider football world has really wanted Postecoglou to succeed at Spurs, and still does, still really wants him to win a trophy, to deliver, and because everyone really admires his front foot football, the way he sees the game, his kind of his background, how he's come through, his story. Everyone loves Postecoglou. People really want him to do
that. But hang on, Tom. I really get this thing
that he thinks that the whole world is against him, because I really don't think it's true.
That this front foot football, though, has become a myth. We haven't, I mean, the first 10 games of last season, yeah, there was the front foot football. I honestly haven't seen it in big games of late, at Aston Villa in the FA Cup, at Liverpool in the League Cup, at AZ Alkmaar in the Europa League, away at Bournemouth in the league, away at Nottingham Forest in the league, at Crystal Palace away in the league. It doesn't exist.
But I think that there's a distinction there between the execution and the game plan. Like I didn't see Spurs in any of those matches going out to defend and going out to be cagey and to
Liverpool in that League Cup semi final. What if they weren't trying to defend that? What were they doing?
But equally, Liverpool are the best team in the world right now, and we can't be hammering Ange for saying that he's gung ho and has no plans and isn't a tactician, and then say he goes away to Anfield and look, they're not attacking the goal every single second. Like we can't have it all ways. Like
that's how he was sold to us. We've got our Tottenham back. If we go, okay, we lost 6-3 at home to Liverpool in the league, you can kind of accept that. But to go to Liverpool away when you've got a 1-0 lead, it's a semi-final of a League Cup. And did we have a shot on target? I think Son towards the end. It was an abomination that night, Tom.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm not going to say there haven't been bad performances. There have been several this season. But I still think the general approach of Ange is to be attacking and is to play on the front foot. And it's chaotic and it's helter-skelter and it's a basketball match, in his words, is what he said today. And it is, but it's compelling. It's fun to watch. It's entertaining. And what I mean is the wider football world, I genuinely believe, has always wanted Ange to do well, and that is why I think it's slightly sad almost that he kind of thinks that there is this almost agenda against him or against Tottenham at the moment, because I really don't think it could be further from the truth. But to get back to your team, I would broadly agree. I wonder if he'll go with the Romero and Van de Ven, because I think Romero, he thinks, brings a real sort of sense of leadership and experience and a certain kind of aura to the team that I think he thinks could be key on these kind of big nights.
Yeah, fair enough.
And I wonder, I think the midfield, I think, is about right. I suspect Porro will still start, even if you don't think he should. And in the front three, I think it will be Son, Solanke. And I think Odegaard is a good shout. I think Johnson off the bench is probably the front three he'll go with. It'll be interesting with Tell, because obviously he was on the bench today, has needed a rest, I think, needed a break. Whether he thinks that with Solanke back, he could play Tell out wide, possibly, which I think he recognises as his better and more comfortable position, is an option. But with Son on the left, Tell on the right isn't really where he wants to be either. So I suspect you're right, that'll be the front three.
Yeah, well, I hope Tellboy can show us what he can do, because Ange keeps bigging him up, and there is a player there as well, and he's still young. I think that more or less covers it as we head towards the biggest game of the season. Is there anything else, Mr. Allnut, you wish to share with us before we head off into the ether?
What did you make of Ange talk about the atmosphere today and saying that the fans need to get behind him on Thursday night? Do you think that was fair enough?
Yes, but I think he could help by not having his arms folded, standing as though he's waiting for a bus to Seven Sisters Station. So it starts with the leader, and it starts with the way the team are playing. And these Spurs fans, listen, I know we can be a miserable bunch, but it's been a pretty miserable period of decades in many ways. So there's a team there, and there are a set of fans there who want to get behind that team. So let's give it our all on Thursday night. And I always love your optimism. We can still turn things around. Let's get through this game, because we can win this, and then see where it leads thereafter.
If they get to the quarterfinals, then the trophy is in sight.
Yeah.
I really think that there's a slightly different mood about a quarterfinal to a last 16 tie. It's the same in any of these cup competitions. The last 16, the draw still feels big and bloated, and you've still got to scroll down your phone to see the bottom. With the quarterfinal,
yes,
it's all in a little block, and you suddenly think, actually, there's seven teams there, and we can beat all of them. You know, well, I do think if they get to the quarterfinal, then they will start thinking about the final. They'll start thinking about the trophy. They'll start believing that there is something of this season they can cling on to, and it will feel a little bit more tangible. So it's there. If they want it to be, it's really there.
Yeah. No, you're right. I watched the Ajax Eintracht Frankfurt game the other day. Ajax at home are really poor, and they're going to have to come from behind in the away leg. They tend to play better away from home. And then if we get to maybe Lazio in the semis, I don't think they're as good as perhaps we are led to believe. So absolutely, there is still a reason to believe, but this Spurs side has got to get off the floor because, I mean, they've underachieved. Tom Allnutt of The Times, thank you very much indeed. A bit of therapy, perhaps. I don't know. There were some positives. Of course, there were some negatives as well. Bottom line is, massive game, Thursday night. Come on, you Spurs.